Welcome back to Rewatchable, episode 101. Tonight we will be talking about Freaks and Geeks, episode 3, Tricks and Treats, and episode 4, Kim Kelly is My Friend. Before we get started, we do want to run over all of our contact information with you in case you want to get a hold of us. For starters, you can always email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. If you're on Twitter, you can find us at re_watchable. You can also comment in the show notes on this post, which will be available at hypeable.com. And of course, if you are on Tumblr, you can reach us at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. My name is Pamela. I'm one of the super fans for this season of Rewatchable. I will be your host today, and joining me are Karen, Kristen, and Caitlin. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Pretty good. Good.
We have cool, some, like, yeah. Major alliteration with our names.
Oh, okay. I had to pause for a second to be honest. I got to confess. I was like, okay, who am I podcasting with today? Awesome. All right. Well, if you guys are ready to get started, we'll jump right in with the episode recap for episode 3, which, of course, is titled Tricks and Treats. In this episode, it's Halloween, and Mrs. Meyer wants Lindsay and Sam to do exactly what they always do on Halloween. But Sam wants to go to a haunted house, and Lindsay wants to hang out with the freaks. Sam ultimately caves, and he, Neil, and Bill, and the rando, like, super geek guy go out trick-or-treating, which ultimately ends in a bit of a scramble. While Sam caved to his mother's wishes, Lindsay literally ran away from her mother and into the waiting arms of her new friends, Dan, Nick, and Ken. Oh, and Kim was there, too. With no better plan than to drive around, Lindsay is ultimately pressured into raising a bit of hell. They kick a few pumpkins, take a baseball bat to a few mailboxes, and stoop to a new low when they take their game to the sidewalk. So, for starters, let's just talk about, I guess they call it a cold opening, right? When they have, like, this scene that doesn't really have anything to do with an episode in a series. We have this crazy scene where, like, Bill promises to drink, like, an inch of whatever Sam and Neil can concoct in a blender. Did this, like, weird you guys out a bit? Were you kind of just, like, grossed out as well?
Boys.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty much, that explains it.
The worst part, though,
I can't, my brothers used to do stuff like this all the time.
Did,
like,
they would
dare each other to eat or drink random weird things. Like, they'd go to restaurants and they'd mix all the condiments on the table and dare each other to eat them. Oh, yeah. It's a boy thing.
Oh, my God.
It doesn't make sense.
The worst, like, when Bill goes in for seconds, though, and he's like, not bad. I'm like, what the heck? It just really drives the point home. But other than that, the episode kind of just gets started, and you see Lindsay kind of having this moment where she's kind of subjected to having to ride the bus with all the geeks. And did anybody ride the bus here to school? Like, because I never did. We had a carpool, so I don't really think the bus stop was ever as awkward as it seems in, you know, in Hollywood TV shows.
I rode the bus.
I was always driven to school, so I didn't get to ride a bus, and I always thought it was the coolest thing. I was so jealous
of
everyone who got to ride the bus.
It is not cool.
True, I was.
Wow.
I was so jealous.
You didn't miss cool it.
Just get on the bus and go to school. Yeah.
That's really funny. Do any of you guys have any horror stories about having to ride the bus to school?
Or
ride
I do.
It back?
I.
Yeah, you want to share one?
Yeah, there was this set of triplets, okay? I was probably, like, in 11th or 12th grade, and there was a set of triplets who were, like, in middle school that used to, like, terrorize everyone on the bus, and I was terrified of them. And it was horrible because they were such little kids, but they were just mean. And you get the biggest thing on school buses, I think, is where you're going to sit. And, like, all the older kids always get to sit in the back. So when you finally move up to being able to sit in the back, you just feel like you're king of the world. And, you know, that's awesome until somebody takes your seat and then you get really territorial about it.
That's funny. You know what, though? Actually, now that you bring that up, it reminds me of this story that my mom always tells about my grandma. because they used to take the bus to school when they were kids. And she said that, like, the big thing when, like, they were in elementary school was, like, who got to get on the bus first, which I guess feeds into, like, who gets to pick their seat first. And I guess, like, the story goes that, like, but, you know, my mom and her brother and sister were always there first because my grandma had to go to work. So she was like, the earlier I get these kids on the bus, like, the sooner I can start walking to work. And this lady, like, came up and she started, like this mom, like, bullying, like, my mom and her siblings because she wanted her daughter to get on the bus first. And my grandma had, like, this whole Gandalf moment where she was like, you shall not pass. And she was like, F you, I'm going to ride the bus with my kids. And then I'm going to report you to the principal because I guess I got a little heated. So that's, like, her claim to fame, her claim to bus fame.
That's amazing.
Yeah, my grandma was crazy in her young years. There is another bit of nostalgia in this episode when Millie gets to the bus stop as well, and she's just, like, really into this Fun Dip that she has, but she calls it Lick-A-May, which I'm assuming is just, like, a copyright issue because the bag clearly says Fun Dip, you know what I mean?
That's what I thought was the funniest thing. I was like, that bag says Fun Dip, and that is what it is. So I don't know what she's calling it, but that's hilarious.
But isn't that the Lick-A-May part, isn't that written on the stick?
See, this is what I thought too. Thank you. Like, I was thinking about this. I was like, I think it just says, like, lick me. Like, lick the stick, and then you can put it in the fun stuff, and then it'll taste better.
I don't know. I mean, I used to be obsessed with Fun Dip because it is, like, the best thing in the entire world, so that's the only reason why I remember. I haven't had it in forever, though.
See, I never liked the dip part. I just liked the little stick. So,
oh man,
I would, honest to God, like, I would open the stick part and just throw the dip part away because I didn't like it.
Are you serious? You could have been the most popular kid at school. You could have had, like, an underground trading ring, you know.
Really? Everybody likes. I mean, it's like pixie sticks back in the day, right? Like,
pretty much.
That's true.
Yeah.
I liked the Fun Dip that changed colors.
Oh yeah. Like the green to blue, right?
Yeah.
I remember that vividly. like, speaking of candy, since we're talking about Halloween, does anybody have any, like, favorite, like, retro Halloween candies that they used to just, like, live for, or, like, try and trade their siblings for? Fun Dip was definitely one of mine. Like, if you got a mini size Fun Dip at one of the houses you went to, man, like, that was it. You had, like, major bargaining rights in my house.
I don't have
siblings. For us, it was Milk Duds.
Milk Duds. Yeah. Those are good ones.
Milk Duds and Whoppers were, like, the top.
We would separate all the candy into piles of what kind it was when we got home, and then, like, the Kit Kat pile would be divvied up evenly for everyone, because everything else we would all kind of take what we liked the best, and the Kit Kats were always a battle. Like, there were three or four kids in my house, and we would always fight over it. It was hilarious.
That's great.
Well, I don't have any siblings, so I never had to fight with anybody. But I would kill, and probably still would kill, for Reese's, just because I love Reese's so much.
Reese's are pretty awesome. I just had one of those the other day, and it was the best decision I had made of the week. No joke. We also get this really great scene in the beginning with Mr. Russo, who is, of course, Lindsay's very involved guidance counselor. He has this really great line that he feeds her that says, like, she's, like, he calls her the Amelia Earhart of the school because she, like, sets off to go to class, but she never gets there, which I thought was pretty funny. Did anybody have a teacher that was, like, this involved, or even a counselor when they were going to school? Because this is definitely a trope that we see. We see, like, the teacher that wants to be cool, like, trying so desperately to connect with these kids. So did anybody have a figure like that growing up in the school system?
No.
Nobody?
I don't think so.
I had teachers that I liked that I, like, thought were cool, but I didn't really have one that I told everything to or that I wanted, you know, that at least, like, interested in my life. Like, that's kind of strange.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I always, like, flew under the radar anyway because I never got in trouble. So maybe there was one in my school, but they definitely never singled me out.
That's so funny. It's because you weren't troubled enough to get singled out.
Right.
That's probably what it is. Yeah. I mean, like, I had teachers, too, that, like, I was closer to, I think. But I think it was always the other way around. Like, there were certain teachers that students gravitated towards in my schooling system. Like, I remember in seventh grade, we had this science teacher named Mr. Jacobs, who I'm actually friends with on because he's awesome. And, like, his classroom was the place to be, like, at lunchtime. So kids would just, like, gravitate towards him because he was just so relatable, you know what I mean? But, like, it was never the other way around for us, as far as I know. Other than that, we see the geeks kind of really bummed out that they have to read this crazy book for ninth grade English, Crime and Punishment by Dostoevsky. So, of course, that's light reading, right? This is kind of crazy because I don't think I ever had to read anything that intense until, like, maybe in high school. Like, we read stuff like Tale of Two Cities or anything like that. But I'm going to ask Karen, because she's the book girl on Hypeable. What was, like, the hardest book you had to read in high school? And does it measure up in any way to Crime and Punishment?
Oh, man. Hardest book I had to read in high school. See, I always really liked the reading assignments. I'm such a nerd. This is showing my true colors. But, like, we read Lord of the Flies, which I really liked. That was kind of an intense book, not difficult, but just, you know, the themes were really intense. We read a lot of, like, Beowulf and, oh God, what was the other one? Paradise Lost. Paradise Lost was probably the hardest one to digest. And I always had difficulty with Shakespeare, too. So I would say, like, mm-hmm. any of those were probably hard. But yeah, ninth grade, that's pretty intense.
Yeah. We read a strange amount of Shakespeare in my school district. Like, it was really weird. It started in seventh grade and it just, like, never let up. I think by the time I graduated high school, we had read, like, most of his plays, which was very strange. But how about Caitlin and Kristen? Do you guys want to weigh in with a book that just kind of, like, gave you nightmares in high school?
Huckleberry Finn.
Oh, interesting.
I was not a fan. Like, it's Twain is just not a writer that I really get into. And so I struggled through that book so long. And it was my junior year. So you're, like, kind of an upperclassman and you kind of think you're better than school anyway. So yeah, it was awful. But I think ninth grade, the best book I read, the one that I only one I can remember, is To Kill a Mockingbird, which yeah. I loved. So it was like when I saw that they were going to read Crime and Punishment, I was like, holy cow, like To Kill a Mockingbird was good, like, in ninth grade. That's craziness.
Yeah, the worst for me was probably my junior year. We read The Grapes of Wrath. Mm. And because we only could read the really depressing Steinbeck, like, my freshman year we read Of Mice and Men, and in eighth grade we read The Red Pony. So I have the absolute massive hate on for Steinbeck because of all these books that we had to read that were so awful.
You know what? Virtual high five, because I feel like you're the only person I've ever met that shares my hatred for Steinbeck. Like, I had to read The Pearl in eighth grade, and after that, I was just like, this is stupid. Like, why? Why Steinbeck? Why? So I totally commiserate with you on that front. So the first scene in this episode that we kind of get with all of the freaks starts off with Kim kind of playing a little practical joke on Lindsay, and she kind of makes her believe that she was this inadvertent narc and sent some guy to, like, prison for it. What did you guys think about this? And, like, what are your thoughts about Kim in general?
Okay, as a newbie, I don't know if I'm the only one. Is Caitlin a newbie too?
Yes.
Okay. I really just want to slap Kim in the face. Like, as of this episode, I was like, oh my God, she's driving me crazy. Like, it doesn't matter what Lindsay does, she's always wrong, and it just makes me really mad.
Yeah, she just has this irrational hatred for her, and it's so annoying. But then again, most of these characters I want to punch in the face at this point because they're all pretty much obnoxious. So
that's true. Karen, you're technically a super fan with me, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so going, like, watching, rewatching the episode, for example, like, and knowing kind of how Kim's story arc progresses, did you see her in a different light the second time around without giving very much away?
I want to say not really, because in the beginning, she's pretty awful. And I agree with Kristen. Sometimes I just want to slap her, because I think a lot of it comes from jealousy and from, you know, her being the only girl. And all of a sudden, here comes another one and she feels threatened by Lindsay. And it's just, it's really unfortunate, but she's just really nasty. And Lindsay tries her best to sort of lay low and not do anything that will get Kim's attention, but Kim just has hawk eyes for her. And so I think, yeah, in these early episodes, I still have a very strong dislike of Kim.
Very cool. Well, I guess we're going to talk a little bit more about Kim in the next episode that we're going to discuss after this, because she plays a much bigger role. But as far as the other freaks go, Nick is just adorable and clueless, all wrapped into one. He does this cute little thing where he, like, tries to make Lindsay feel better about the whole thing, where he's like, oh, it's okay, they played the same joke on me last week. What do you guys think about Nick? Let's start with the newbies first.
I'm trying to decide if he's just really big sweetheart and want, you know, and kind of has a thing for Lindsay and wants to, like, make her feel better, or if he kind of does what Ann Perkins used to do on Parks and Rec and, like, kind of takes on personality quirks of whoever she's, like, dating or interested in. Like, because he kind of acts like Lindsay when she's around. When she's not, he acts like all of the other freaks, but, like, when she's around, he kind of starts, oh, it's okay, I know, don't worry about it. Like, he kind of takes on her manners, and so I thought that was really cute. But I love him. I think Nick's adorable.
I liked him until the party when he starts trying to undo her bra. And then I was like, okay, this is what your angle is. Okay, so he's like the capital N nice guy, and I'm like, not here for it at all. I see what you're doing. Don't want to hear it.
Interesting. Interesting. This is my favorite part about this show, because, like, obviously, like, if you've seen it, you kind of know where they all end up. And then just to hear you guys talk about it is really cool. So the other person that kind of has this crazy moment in this episode is Millie, who's like goody two shoes Millie. And then all of a sudden you see her, like, making out with this guy on the street. Were you guys as shocked as I was?
That was so random.
I still
don't know what to make of it.
Pretty much, yeah. Like, she's just hanging out by his car, and all of a sudden, and I think Lindsay, the look on Lindsay's face when she saw what was going on is pretty much what I was doing. I was like, wait, what? Like, what is happening right now?
I like how she calls him her secret lover, too. Like, you know, it's not just, like, her boyfriend. She's like, that's my secret lover.
She's so serious, like, we can't French kiss until we've been going out for 6 months or we're going to hell. Like,
yes.
You are so intense about this. Oh, my gosh.
Did you guys hear how I saw real-life Millie in Walmart the other day?
What?
Yeah.
Tell the story.
I swear to God, I was just walking down the aisles and I turned the corner and there was this girl who has that sort of, like, long oval shaped face, but she had blonde hair, but her voice, I swear to God, was the exact same voice as Millie. And Millie has a really unique kind of, like, way that she talks. And this girl, I'm talking, I had to do, like, a triple take. It was insane.
Yeah, it's funny because she is obviously, like, a very, like, specific type of character, but I think she's probably my favorite character in this whole series, just because she's so, like, you never know what's going to come out of her mouth, and she's so ridiculously extreme that you just can't help but laugh at her. Like, she's got some of the best lines, I think, in the entire series. I don't know if that was purposefully planned or what, probably was, because that's kind of, like, right up Judd Apatow's alley, but I really enjoy her whenever she's on screen. So Mrs. Weir, like, this is, like, her episode. She's, like, completely obsessed with Halloween, to like a complete other level. I've never, like, none of my parents were super into it. They always just kind of hemmed and hawed when they had to take us out trick-or-treating. Were any of your parents, like, do any of your parents' enthusiasm for Halloween match Mrs. Weir's?
No. Not even close.
No.
No.
I think, like, Christmas is more of a holiday that, you know, I could see parents getting excited about. But Halloween is just pretty random. Other than that, they bring up this whole, like, razor blades and the candy warning, which I think we all kind of grew up with, right? Like, you shouldn't eat unwrapped candy or slightly unwrapped candy because you never know what's going to be in there. Did you guys think it was weird that, like, Mrs. Weir didn't know about this rule? Or do you think she's just kind of, like, in her own head and living in a different time when, like, you know, the streets are much safer?
I think that at this time period, it was still kind of, like, coming up, that it was very new. Maybe she's living in her own head, but I feel like this is sort of a new thing, and that she was, like, you know, so blissfully ignorant of it.
Well, and then they get the little, like, homemade fun size bars from the hippie guy that are unwrapped, and I'm like, okay, well, maybe I'm remembering 1999 wrong. Like, maybe this is, you know, like, maybe that was a thing. Like, I couldn't put my finger on it. But, yeah, it was definitely a little strange.
Yeah. The look on her face, too, when, like, the little girl tells her that, like, there's ants crawling all over her baked cookies is so sad.
I know.
Like, she's so bad, like, she just came here to have a good time. And, you know.
Honestly, I feel, like, so attacked right now.
Exactly. Thank you. So she also really, really just wants her kids to, I think, kind of like the whole point of her in this episode is that she's really grasping onto, like, the innocence that she used to have in her kids that are now growing up. So she desperately wants, like, Sam, for example, to go trick-or-treating. When did you guys stop trick-or-treating, and how old do you guys think is too old to go trick-or-treating? Let's start with Caitlin.
I stopped when I was 12 because when I was 13, I moved, like, November 1st, so there was no way I could have gone out the night before, so the last year I ever went out was 12, but I had friends when I was a sophomore in high school who would still go out, so I was a little like, why is everyone judging these people? I knew people older than them who were trick-or-treating, and no one thought it was weird.
Kristen?
I don't really remember. I think the last year that I went, like, by myself was probably freshman year of high school, but I had a little brother at home who was, like, 6, so the following year I just followed him with another bag, so I didn't really have to trick or treat, but I got candy, so that was great. But yeah, I think 9th grade was the last year I dressed up and, like, went with friends.
How about you, Karen?
I have no idea when the last time was that I went trick-or-treating, but I remember loving trick-or-treating. And honestly, I would probably still be doing it, even though I'm 26 years old, because I think Halloween is awesome. But my biggest thing now is that they set the curfews so early, and you can't, like, I don't know if this is the same everywhere, but in my town, it's between, like, 5 and 8 p.m. that kids can go trick-or-treating. It's not even dark out, and it just ruins the entire thing for me.
That's so weird. See, that was the other thing I was going to bring up about this episode, which is that I thought it was so strange that Sam, Bill, and Neil were getting such an early start, because in my house and in my town, you know, nobody really went out until it got dark. So we're all trick-or-treating from, like, 8 to 10 or 11 at night, you know? And I think that does make it more fun because all the lights are on and the spooky houses are even spookier, and it just makes for a grand old time.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I'm kind of in the same boat as Kristen, is that I always had, like, if I didn't have little siblings, because my dad got remarried when my parents got divorced, so and they have 4 kids, my dad and my stepmom. So we range in age from 26, I'm the oldest, to now 14. So there was always somebody to go trick-or-treating with, like, even if you were the moody teenager that was, like, begrudgingly taking the younger ones out. But you were also, like, secretly excited that you were going to get candy anyway, you know? and then if it wasn't that, like, I always had little cousins. So I think, like, I don't know, like, I went trick-or-treating, like, technically – I mean, and up until in my 20s, because I always ended up having to take somebody out. And, you know, we live in a small town, so the people out there are pretty nice. And, you know, everybody always gives adults candy anyway. Adults need sugar, too, you know?
Sometimes more than the kids.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they need it to stay up. My favorite, though, was that in 2010, I had to take my cousins out for trick-or-treating, and it was also the year the Giants were in the World Series. So, like, it was really funny because all the parents are going from house to house being like, what's the score of the game? They were playing on Halloween, and it was just, like, so fun because, like, the whole city was involved in the hype, and we were all just like, what's going on? So that was really great. Lindsay has a completely opposite Halloween extravaganza to Sam, and she goes out to do some tricking. Did any of you guys, like, ever get into these hijinks, like TPing houses, egging people, or anything like that when you were growing up?
We TP'd in high school, usually our choir director's house, and it usually was, like, toward the end of the year, but we did that at least once a year. It was good fun.
Yeah, I don't think any of the, like, the TPing and stuff like that we used to do was, like, malicious. You know, you always, like, TP'd your friend's house or your friend's car because it was funny.
Our teachers thought it took it as, like, a they really do like us thing. Like, it's more of, like, we like you so much, we know you'll have fun with this. So it wasn't, like, malicious or mean or anything.
Yeah, definitely. It's just, like, usually it's, like, kids being kids and, like, and Halloween in my town, like, everybody always knew there was, like, the one street, it's called Sycamore, it's right by the middle school, and, like, everybody that lives on that street knows that they're gonna get targeted because they're right down the street from the school, and so it's, like, I feel like it's all in good fun. At least as far as I've heard, no one's ever complained because you kind of know what you're getting into when you move into that neighborhood. But Lindsay is just, like, such a goody two-shoes that she can't even smash a pumpkin in. What did you guys think about this scene?
That would be me, honestly. I would probably get my foot stuck in it and fall over, and it would be ridiculous. Yeah.
I wonder if, like just the way the scene is shot, like, I wouldn't be surprised if it just happened accidentally for Linda Carlini, you know, and they were just like, just go with it, just go with it. It's 10 times funnier if your foot gets stuck in the pumpkin, you know?
I would have been surprised if she kicked it and it worked and she ran back to the car. Like, it just works so much better this way. Yeah.
I never understood the smashing pumpkin situation. Like, I always just thought that was really mean, you know, but I feel like if I ever got pressured into it, I would just, like, throw the pumpkin. Like, I don't think I would put the effort in to kick it in. That seems a little violent.
Well, it's probably a good thing it was still daylight out, because when those pumpkins get lit, slam it, your shoe catches on fire.
That's true. But I love how, like, Mr. Russo was prepared. He's like, that is not cool that he has, like, this supply of pumpkins. That's pretty great. But speaking of violent tricks, then we have the baseball bat to the mailbox. Somebody put in the doc, isn't this a felony or something? So clearly somebody has some very very strong thoughts on this.
Well, isn't it some sort, like, you're not supposed to mess with mailboxes? Like, isn't that a thing?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah, and so I'm watching them take a baseball bat to mailboxes, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I never would have gone there. I wouldn't have even thought of it, but hey, you know.
Also, like, I played softball, and like, you get a good reverb on that bat. Like,
yeah.
When you're, so I can't even imagine trying to take down a mailbox.
I think anyone who gets that reverb deserves it, because I think that's too far.
Yeah, but Nick's face,
like,
that,
like, a pumpkin is one thing. Like, pumpkins are organic or whatever, but, like, the mailbox, that's a little much.
Right? And some people take pride in their mailboxes. Like, some people have the fancy little ones, look like chickens or barn houses or whatever. Yeah, it's just rude. I totally agree. So, of course, it's not a Freaks and Geeks episode without some bullying taking place. So we have Alan, who's the resident series bully, who comes over and, like, tries to pick a fight with Sam and the gang and ends up stealing their candy. So do we all kind of agree that, like, Sam kind of gets the worst end of the stick in this episode? Like, first his candy gets stolen, and then he gets egged by his sister.
I just wanted to give him a hug. I was like, it's okay. I promise. Like, it gets better. the poor thing. I can't imagine. I've never heard of someone being egged. I mean, until, like, Glee, when they started doing it, I was like, how's this being egged? But poor kid. Like, that's awful.
Yeah, definitely. Like, all he wants is to go have, like, one more childish Halloween, then Alan has to ruin it. What are you guys' thoughts on Alan in general? Like, and why do you think he kind of targets Sam? I guess this is more of a question for the newbies, if anything.
He's obnoxious. Like, there's seriously nothing out there in the media that was anything like my high school experience, because there were not people like this in my high school who, like, targeted people and beat the crap out of them and wrote on their lockers, like, for no reason. This just did not happen. So I'm just sort of like, what is your problem? Like, get over yourself.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, like, growing up very close to San Francisco, I feel like there was a lot of tolerance and empathy for different kinds of people. But, you know, that's just my little hippie town. But I'm glad to know that I'm not the only one that, like, thinks it's weird to see these kinds of tropes playing out on Hollywood TV. Because I know there are places like that that I just can't imagine them, because I just never grew up around it, you know? Lindsay once again just kind of fails with Kim, and you know, Kim just really hates Lindsay. Are we all just kind of in agreement of what I think was it Karen or Kristen brought up that Kim just kind of is a little threatened by her?
I think it was Karen, and yeah, I mean, that's definitely something that Kim is dealing with. Like, she is not sure how to handle Lindsay, and so she's just overly mean and snarky until she can kind of figure out what else to do, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, because in a way, like, it's almost like Lindsay, like, wants so desperately to be more like Kim, you know? Like, she just wants to be, like, effortlessly cool. I guess that's how she kind of sees her. Like, she might be mean and, like, grisly on the outside, but she still, like, kind of wants to be a little bit like her in a way.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Like, she wants to be the girl who can hang out with, you know, Dan and all of them and not feel weird. You can tell Lindsay still doesn't feel comfortable just, like, walking up and hanging out with them all the time. So she wants to be Kim and feel comfortable. So, yeah, I totally see that.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we talked a little bit about Sam getting egged, but let's kind of go back to that a bit. In a strange twist of fate, like, as soon as Lindsay is having a blast, like, smashing in mailboxes and pumpkins, she throws her first egg out the window, and it turns out that she ends up egging her little brother, Sam. But in a twist of events, Sam does not rat her out when they are both at home with their parents, and her parents are kind of distraught after seeing him all egged up. Did you guys, like, think it was interesting that he didn't tattle on her? And would any of your siblings have done this for you, for example, if you had been the one to egg them? Or the other way around, I guess, too. If they had egged you, would you have kept it from your parents and just been like, I'm going to give you a pass?
We would have ratted each other out right away, like, without a doubt. Anytime in our house, like, if it was, like, sibling on sibling crime, it was not a secret. Now, if you were keeping something from the parents, like, something else, we could be in cahoots. But if you, like, hurt me or annoyed me, like, you were done for.
Yeah, what age difference matters too, because my siblings are 8 and 10 years older than me, so we do not have that closeness that you would have when you're as close in age as Sam and Lindsay are. So, A, this never would have happened in my family because my siblings are way older than me, and B, like, there's just, like, with that big difference, there's, like, nothing to rat on at that point.
Yeah, that's true. But it is kind of a funny turn for Sam, because the kind of one of the first scenes we see with him in this entire series is that he rats out Alan in the lunchroom for smashing his Twinkies, you know? So we kind of get the feeling that he's a bit of a tattletale, but for some reason he just doesn't have it in him to tattle on his sister. So what do you guys think that is?
Alan's a jerk, and he deserves anything he gets. And they're probably going to be bigger repercussions if he tattles on his sister.
That's a good point. I also think, too, like, it had to do with hoping that she's, like, still, like, normal on the inside or normal to him, you know, which kind of feeds into this, like, kind of like the last line they have together, which is when Sam tells her that nobody thinks you're cool, you know, and she goes, trust me, I know. So... what did you guys think about that little exchange between the two of them?
Well, I put that as my favorite line.
Literally, the second he said it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so good.
I was going to suggest that, you know, she's been clearly struggling so much since her grandmother died, and she's trying to put herself in a place where she feels comfortable, and she's not comfortable anywhere. She's not comfortable with Millie anymore, but she's not fitting into the freaks group, and she wants to, but she can't. So it's just sad that she's not able to find a place where she can be in her own skin and be okay.
Yeah, that's a good point. Karen, I'm going to wait to ask you until we get to our favorite lines, because I just realized that that's yours.
Yeah.
So let's move on to favorite scenes before we move on to favorite lines. Let's just go down the line here. We'll start with Caitlin.
So my favorite scene was when Mr. Weir was trying to talk Sam out of trick-or-treating, saying he was too old. Like, the way he just goes off on these spiels, like, dire warnings. There was this guy who went in when he was in his 20s, and you know where he's now? He's living with his mother, and he never took a wife. Like, you were so over the top and ridiculous.
Yeah, I love Mr. Weir. Like, he's just so funny. It also reminds me of that Mean Girls, what's that line where they're like, he's like, don't have sex or you will get pregnant and die.
That's exactly what I think of with him.
Karen, what was your favorite scene this episode?
Mine was the whole part between Lindsay and her brother after Lindsay egged him. First of all, because she felt really badly about it. And I don't think it was because she was worried about getting in trouble. I think that she genuinely felt bad that she had egged her own brother. And I love how Sam didn't rat on her. Again, I don't think it was self-preservation. I don't think that he was like, you know, if I tell on you, then you're just going to go around and do something bad to me. I think he just, you know, there's a lot of moments throughout the series, I think, that they show how much they genuinely like each other. And their sibling relationship, I think, is something that I haven't seen on television a lot, because usually it's very combative, whereas I think that a lot of the times here, they actually get along really well, and I really like seeing that.
Yeah. You know what? That's something that I really like about this show, too, because my brother and I, like, I think we used to fight a lot more when we were younger, but once we're 3 years apart. But once, like, he became a freshman in high school and I was a senior, we just kind of, like, completely turned a new leaf. And, like, he's, like, one of my best friends. Like, I love my little brother. So I love seeing relationships like this on TV where, like, they've kind of always got each other's backs, even if they've got their differences, you know? So I totally love that you brought that up.
I think also...
yeah, my brother and I...
to say, I think it's important that she egged Sam, because anyone else, she wouldn't have cared. And she really needs to be brought back to ground and realize that's not something she would ever do. And it took it being Sam for her to do that.
That's a good point. Kristen, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, my brother and I are very similar to Pam. He's 2 years younger than me. And so we had a lot of the same friends in high school. So it was like, as soon as we got to high school and like started hanging out like normal people, my brother and I got really close. So Sam and Lindsay are very close to like my brother and I and how we related in high school. So I really do like their relationship too.
Yeah, it is definitely like that age. And I think that that's what the kind of the relationship is trying to portray, like just like rewatching these episodes, just that they're at that age now where they're starting to get closer and they're seeing each other as like as people and not just as like, oh, this is my little brother, or this is my older sister. So that's, you know, that's really fun to watch as well. Kristen, let's go back to you. Why don't you talk about your favorite scene in this episode?
My scene is where the random dude, I think his name's Harris, tells the geeks all about what the hippies are doing to Halloween candy that year, and like how they like covered their own poo in chocolate and that's what they're giving out. And like, it was just so funny, like watching them get all grossed out over it, and you can see them thinking like, maybe this isn't a good idea. And then Harris is like, hey, that sounds like fun, can I come with you? Like, it's just so great. I just love the whole thing.
He's like their Yoda, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
the king of the nerds, but only because he's like older and has more experience, like living life the way they're destined to lead life.
And facial hair. I feel like that's really important to point out, is that he has facial hair.
That's true. Maybe that comes into like why they think he's so wise or something like that. We'll definitely see a lot more of him throughout the season. But other than that, I think my favorite scene was just the montage scene where you see Neil and Bill specifically like getting ready for Halloween. Like, they just have some great lines while they're, you know, kind of preparing to go out on the town. And they just have like really good comic timing and stuff like that. So I really enjoyed that. All right, let's move on to favorite lines for this episode. We'll go back to Caitlin. What was your favorite?
So mine was after that Amelia Earhart line we mentioned earlier, Mr. Ross. I was like, come on, Lindsay, don't turn me into the man here. I'm just trying to help you. Like, he's just so over trying to be relatable. And it's so ridiculous.
Yeah. What do you, speaking of that, like, what would you guys think that Mr. Ross's backstory is? Like, who do you think, like, he was when he was in high school? Would you say he was more of a freak or more of a geek?
Neither. He doesn't seem like either. There are plenty of other groups.
That's true. Where would you categorize him?
And like, he seems like a lifelong hippie.
Yeah, I totally agree. It must be the long hair.
Yeah. Like, this doesn't seem like someone who has picked up being a hippie later in life. Like, he was totally a hippie when he was younger, and he just never grew out of it.
All right, Karen, I think you already kind of talked about this, but why don't we, for all intents and purposes, let's just talk about your favorite line in this episode.
Yeah, mine was the one where Sam goes, nobody thinks you're cool, you know, and Lindsay says, trust me, I know. And the reason why I like this is because for, you know, however many episodes, the three episodes that we've seen so far, Lindsay has been trying so, so hard to fit in, and you feel like she thinks she is fitting in until this line where you realize that she knows exactly what everybody's saying about her. She knows what people think of her, and she knows that she's just sort of floating around at this point. And I think that shows that there's a lot more awareness and depth to Lindsay than maybe you see at first glance.
I like it. What about your favorite line?
I kind of have two. One is Harris's reaction when Alan like pushes him down and he falls and he goes, ow, I fell on my knife. And it's the head, like the knife sticking out of his head, like hit the ground. It was hilarious the way he said it. So it just like caught me by surprise. But my other favorite is from Mr. Weir. And he says, Gene, I don't think there's bearded ladies running around throwing eggs at kids. He means hippies. And it's just something about the visual of bearded ladies like running around their town throwing eggs at children just made me giggle. I loved it.
That'd be a pretty handsome woman if it was a bearded lady. So I like you, Kristen, I tend to go for the more comedic lines in this episode. So my favorite kind of goes back to my favorite scene, which is the montage of Bill and Neil getting ready for Halloween. And it happens when Neil is drawing on his mustache for his costume, and he says, looking for Chaplin, only seeing Hitler, which I thought was pretty funny. Neil's a hoot, though, in general. Like, he just lives in his own little bubble like most of these characters do. All right, well, if nobody else has any pressing things to bring up about episode 3, we will move on to episode 4. Anybody else have anything to add? Final thoughts on this episode? Like it? Dislike it?
I liked it, but I'm so ready for episode 4.
Nice. All right, well, let's move on to episode 4, entitled Kim Kelly is My Friend. So in this episode, in a totally genius move by Kim to prove her parents that she has smart, rich friends too, she makes up a bunch of lies about Lindsay's parents owning a lake house and then invites Lindsay to dinner to impress them. To no one's surprise, Kim's genius plan fails when Lindsay can't name a single street near her lake house. The Kelly household goes from calm and quiet to a raucous disaster in seconds, and Lindsay and Kim almost literally run for their lives. Kim then sees Jan in a semi-compromising position, and things go from bad to worse. While Lindsay's world gets a good shake, Sam is being picked on by Kim's friend Karen for basically existing. This incident incites a little geek infighting as Sam and Neil try to decide who's the bigger geek. So let's get right into this and talk about the fact that Rashida Jones makes a well, I guess it's not really a cameo because no one really knew who she was at this point, but it's a cameo for us looking back, right? Rashida is the very, very angry Karen in this episode. How excited were you guys to see her on screen?
I freaked. I was like, oh my God. And it totally makes me want to write an article about like Rashida Jones from Karen to Ann Perkins. Like how her career has taken her from playing the mean, evil bully to like this really sweet girl who just wants to help everyone. Like it just, I love seeing her. It was great.
Please write that article. And what about I'm just you? Throwing this out
yeah,
now.
Yeah, you should.
We need more articles, so go right ahead.
I'm going to have to.
Caitlin, what about you? Because you're the other newbie.
I had no idea who that was. So oh, I didn't even know it was anybody to be excited about. So this yes. is news to me. I still Caitlin. Don't know who it is. Who is this?
I'm going to let Chris take that one.
She plays Ann Perkins on Parks and Rec. She's like Amy Poehler's character's like best friend. And she's a nurse and really sweet, but she did a great job in Parks and Rec, and I love her. And so I was just really, really excited to see her make a random pop-up. She's not a person I've ever really seen on stuff before Parks and Rec, so seeing that she did have things going on shows that I've just missed was kind of like a surprise. I didn't realize it.
Oh, I've never seen Parks and Rec, so that's probably why.
Yeah.
She was also in I Love You, Man, also with Jason mm-hmm. Segel. So that's a fun little correlation. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's funny, like, watching this back, because I think I mentioned on the first episode of this season of Rewatchable that I was watching Freaks and Geeks, like, when I was much younger. I'm sure they were already, like, reruns, but I remember watching them on Fox Family, which is now ABC Family. So, like, I obviously didn't recognize any of these people watching it the first time around with my brother. But, like, even rewatching them now, I'm just like, oh, my God, that person was in this show. Like, what the heck? So it's pretty cool for us, too.
I keep finding myself watching all of the background characters. I'm like, do I know anybody? Is there anybody random?
There? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, occasionally I'm like, ooh, is that? No, it's not. So I find that a nice added little bonus to watching it.
There's one coming up in, like, a very later episode, kind of towards the end, that I'm really excited for you guys to see. It's one of those that you're like, is that? Oh, my God. So when we get to that, that'll be really exciting.
I wonder if I'm thinking of the same one, because if it is, I'm really excited about it too.
Oh my gosh, we're going to have to private chat on Facebook later. Because I don't want to spoil it, but I'm also really excited
yeah.
about it. All right, so Karen is, like we said, she's just so angry because I guess her boyfriend broke up with her. And she's just taking it out on everybody. Sam kind of gets accidentally punched in the solar plexus, and he accidentally mistakes her locker for his locker, and then she just kind of goes crazy on him. And what did you guys think about this scene?
when she pulled up his shirt to, like, check his armpit, I was like, what is she doing? Like, no person in any high school would get away with that I can think of. Like, I can't imagine any of that going on when I was in high school. So that took me a little by surprise. But just, she's, definitely no fun. Not having a very good week, apparently.
Yeah, that was intense. I mean, like, I know Caitlin and I kind of talked about our own high school experiences, but, like, did any of this intense, like, bullying and, like, you know, like, shoving into lockers ever happen for Karen and Kristen, you guys?
Not really. Yeah. We pretty much got along. Like, I mean, we had different cliques and whatnot, but they weren't, like, outright mean to each other, so.
I want to say there wasn't any violent bullying, but there was definitely subtle bullying. And there were a few girls who were like, you didn't want to make eye contact with them because they were kind of scary. And I mean, I went to like a small high school out in the country, so I think it's funny that mine's the one that's like, maybe there was some bullying, but definitely nothing this intense. And I will agree that in this episode, there are a few things that like, it would never happen in the real world, but you know, it's for entertainment, and I think it's supposed to be a little out there and ridiculous, so it works for the show.
Yeah. Karen also, she gets some pretty good jabs in. Like, she's really mean, but she's got some good comebacks. She calls Neil Bilbo Baggins, which I thought was pretty funny. Do you guys have a good laugh about that, too?
Oh, yeah.
And I couldn't remember. Who's a geek, if you know that
word. Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought, too, because, like, you know. Like, somebody wrote in this doc here, like, the movies hadn't even come out yet. So clearly she's kind of running along the same vein as the geeks there.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so I also think it's really funny that, like, anytime, like, any of the geeks get picked on, like, they're just like, well, I guess we're going to have to beat them up so they don't bother us again. Do you guys think that, and it's really cute, too, because Sam's like, I don't want to beat up a girl. So what do you guys think about this logic in general?
Boys.
Yeah, that's true. It's kind of like peacocking, right? Like you're marking your territory.
So their beating up tends to be getting beat up and then hoping they lose interest in them after that.
That's true. That's the Harris logic, right? Like if you let them punch you, they'll leave you alone. So Kim is acting very strange in this episode. The first notion we get of this is when she asks Lindsay to hang out. So for the newbies here, like, did this kind of take you by surprise or were you kind of already thinking like something fishy is going on here?
Yeah, I thought she was setting her up for something because, I mean, just the episode before we saw her play the joke on her at the beginning and it was a minor version, but I thought she was setting her up to get her to come with her somewhere and then was going to do something horrible. So I had no idea what to expect, but I was expecting really bad things for Lindsay.
I read the episode synopsis before watching it, so I knew what was going on.
Just kidding. So Kim also kind of like, man, she's just kind of like a jerk all around. And she kind of feeds into Karen's anger and she kind of like spurs her on in her hatred for Sam. And after Sam finishes wiping down his locker, which Karen had originally written geek on in lipstick, she decides to re-graffiti it in permanent marker so that he will not be able to erase it. She writes pygmy geek on his locker, which is pretty mean. It's also pretty funny, but it's just like, wow. But then when they try and like confront a teacher about it, when the teacher comes up, he just like kind of assumes that like Sam wrote it on his own locker and defiled school property. What did you guys think about this?
I was so angry at that part because it's like, and you know, he actually says it, why would I do that to my own locker? And I'm just like, TV teacher logic is they just don't think through it. And this was the one part that I was like, that would never happen in real life. Nobody's that stupid.
Yeah, this is one of those TV high school tropes where the teacher just assumes that because you're the one there, you did it. I hate it. So the second he walked up to him, I was like, oh no, he's going to accuse him of writing it on his own locker. Like, really? Really? No, he clearly didn't. Like, yeah, drove me crazy.
Yeah, it's really funny because the teachers on the show, like, they're kind of like on along the veins of like, oh, like you get hurt, like rub a little dirt on it, or like bullying is not that bad, which is kind of strangely mirroring of our own society. Like, you have some people that are like, you know, we need to stop bullying, and other people that are like, oh, I got bullied as a kid and like I turned out fine. You know what I mean? So I kind of feel like the teachers are kind of on that other vein where they're just like, it's just, you guys will be fine. Like, don't worry about it. But there's some like serious crap going on at the school. So it's just kind of interesting to see how like they usually never side with the geeks. So the next scene we see is Kim inviting Lindsay to come over for dinner. And again, I think we're all kind of thinking like, what is Kim up to? Because Kim has never really been nice to Lindsay. Did you guys think that dinner was going to escalate the way it did at Kim's house?
Most definitely not the level it got to. Nowhere near. I didn't imagine it going as far as it did.
No, that was crazy.
Yeah. For the listeners that haven't watched, well, I'm sure you've all watched the episode, but for anybody listening that's new, we'll just recap a little bit about what happens. So Kim, of course, brings Lindsay over to try and convince her parents that she's friends with smart people too, and all of her friends are burnouts. And then when they start quizzing Lindsay on this lake house that she supposedly has because her family is loaded, Lindsay can't name a street that goes by her house, this fake lake house that Kim has fabricated. And all of a sudden her parents just get crazy. And it's pretty insane. Like, but watching this, you guys kind of like, did she feel sorry for Kim? Like, was, especially for, I guess, the newbies, like, did it make you see her in a different light, having seen like home life is?
Well, it definitely makes you understand she kind of acts the way she does. Like, I didn't necessarily feel like, I feel bad that she has to go through that. I still don't think it's right that she treats Lindsay the way she does, but I can kind of see how she became the way she is, which makes it easier to kind of relate to the character. So yeah, like, I mean, Kim is still not my favorite, but I'm starting to understand why she's not just, you know, bubbly and light all the time.
Yeah, she very much comes across as like the persona she has as a defense mechanism for the abuse she's suffering at home, but she very much needs to, like, we saw her throwing insults at her, I guess, her stepdad. Like, you know, she needs to be nasty in an effort to protect herself from that, so it makes sense. But at the same time, it's just, she's really nasty, and then as we see later, she doesn't do a lot to get herself out of like her relationship with a horrible dude. So it's, I lose a little sympathy for her, Daniel thing.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll get to that scene in a bit, but before that, we still have the geeks that are trying to figure out how to deal with the Karen issue. And they're all kind of congregated together, and Sam and Neil have this like kind of geek off. They're trying to accuse each other of who's the bigger geek, you know, between the two of them. So let's just go around the room here. Who's the bigger geek and why? We'll start with Karen.
Oh, no. Wait, the characters?
Yes, the characters. Okay. Sam and Neil. Who's the bigger geek?
I think I'm going to go with Neil. Just because of the way that he dresses, and he just comes off as like that overly kind of proper to me. And I don't know, maybe it's just that it's a little bit easier to see that on the surface rather than, you know, Sam hides it a little bit better, I think.
What about you, Kristen?
For me, it's definitely Neil. I feel like, I mean, Sam fits in with his friends with Bill and Neil, no problem. But I feel like if slash when Sam like hits puberty and kind of like grows into his own skin a little bit, I feel like he could be a very different kid. Like, not necessarily change the things he likes and the, you know, the classes he hate or anything like that, but I feel like he could be more confident in himself and wouldn't necessarily be as awkward. Like right now, I still feel like he's in that I'm in high school, but I feel like a little kid awkwardness, and I feel like he can grow out of that. Whereas Neil is, I think, very much who he's going to be. And so he has, you know, like he's embraced who he is, but he's not really going to change much.
Hmm. Caitlin, what about you?
I think it's Sam, but it's really because I think Neil is less of a geek and more just sleazy. So, I mean, I
could see that.
Sam's adorable. I just think Neil's really sleazy. So,
yeah, it's interesting. You're right, because and this is why I have a hard time deciding myself, because Neil is like, he is kind of more of like a go-getter. Like he's not shy or socially awkward. Like he'll kind of just talk to anybody. And Sam has kind of got that whole, like, he kind of gets the giggles. Like, you see that a lot, especially when Cindy kind of enters the picture in any scenes that she's in. And I think that's what kind of brings out the geekier side of Sam, apart from being, you know, having not grown into himself in general. But so moving on from that, Kim's day just kind of goes from bad to worse. And as her and Lindsay are going off to meet up with the guys, she kind of catches Dan in a compromising position with Karen. So did you guys kind of feel bad for Kim? Like, you know, she's just like, or did you kind of feel like she kind of deserved it? Like all of this was like a comeuppance for how terrible she had been for the duration of the show so far.
I felt bad for her because she's in a crappy situation. She had like one outlet for support and he's also a dick. So like it just, things go from bad to worse for her.
Yeah. I just think it's kind of funny because you kind of get the feeling like at the beginning that her and Dan's relationship is not like the steadiest, you know what I mean? So it's almost like she should expect him to kind of be a little smarmy, but she's still caught off guard, you know? And maybe it is because her and Karen are supposed to be some sort of friends that she kind of gets caught off guard. She doesn't expect it to go down that way, but
totally breaking girl code right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So Kim goes over to dinner at the Weirs, which is very different from dinner at her own house. And she's just kind of angry eating and Mr. and Mrs. Weir just kind of don't know what to make of her. What did you guys think about this scene in general?
I just could not doubt that watching Kim eat dinner and, like, act the way she was, that the Weirs were sitting there thinking, wow, maybe we have it easy. Like, Sam and Lindsay are pretty respectful and well-behaved. Like, we've raised them to be good kids. Maybe, you know, maybe we should be a little more relaxed about it. Because, my God. Because, I mean, they seem like decent parents and they're not too strict over things, but you know, comparatively speaking, like as soon as a parent kind of sees a kid that's kind of the other end of the spectrum from theirs, you know, it's kind of like a whoa kind of moment, like a step back moment. So I feel like that's kind of what they had here.
Yeah, definitely. Karen, any thoughts about this? You've been a little quiet lately.
Yeah, I agree with Kristen that the Weirs were probably like, maybe we should just be thankful for what we have. But I, you know, I just like this whole episode in general. And, even though Kim is kind of crazy, I think that there's a reason for it. And I'm glad that they decided to dive into this fairly early on in the series to kind of give you an idea of where she's coming from. It definitely doesn't justify her actions, but at least there's, you know, you can, it's not coming out of left field and you can understand why she acts the way she does.
Yeah, definitely. The pacing of this show is very interesting in and of itself, because I feel like nowadays if this was airing, Kim is as like this angry, bitchy girl would have been kind of stretched over maybe half a season, not necessarily over, you know, the first three episodes. Because you are kind of starting to get a different side of her here and you're starting to learn a little bit more about her. So if you thought dinner at Kim's house was dramatic, I mean, things get a little dramatic when Nick and Dan show up at Lindsay's house. Of course, Dan is trying to talk some sense into Kim and kind of maybe apologize for what she saw earlier. But Nick is still, again, kind of clueless. He just kind of, my favorite scene in this whole episode is when, like, you know, they're trying to track down Kim, who's like, I don't want to talk to Dan right now. And she, like, runs off into one of the rooms. And Nick just kind of stops to, like, kind of chat with Lindsay, like, how are you doing today? Like, oh, nothing's going on here that's out of the ordinary. What did you guys think about this?
I like Nick so far. Like, I mean, he's got issues, but I think he's funny. So anytime Jason Segel is on screen, I'm just like, I think he's adorable. So it's like, yeah, I just want to hug him. He looks like he needs a hug.
He's so creepy when he, like, gives Lindsay the massage, though. I'm just like, I cannot deal with your creepiness.
Maybe I still see Marshall. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it might be clouding my judgment.
He definitely toes the line from, like, stalker to, you know,
yeah, adorable. No, he does have a few creepier tendencies, I'll give you that.
But I think overall, like, you know, you can tell he means well, you know, at least so far. Did anybody else think it was interesting that out of all the rooms that Kim ends up in, she ends up in Sam's room?
Yeah. I was like, really? That's the door she picks? Like, yeah. It just kind of took me off guard, yeah.
Well, the interesting part is, too, is that she chooses to enter and stay there. Like, she doesn't just say, like, oh, never mind, I'm going to go to an empty room, you know? So, what did you guys think about this? I mean, I do like that Sam stuck up for himself, but what did you think about the exchange between Kim and Sam? Because this is kind of the first scene we kind of see the two have, like, an elongated period of time together alone.
She looks like she's going to eat him whole. He just looks so small, like, in size and presence compared to her. So it was just like, she just seems like she could eat him.
And if I'm remembering it correctly, she sat, like, really close to him on the bed. And I was like, wow. Like it took me aback, too. I was like, wow, you're right. She's such a big presence compared to him. It was like, okay.
At this point in the episode, too, it's kind of like Sam's like, I've had enough. Like, this is my, like, sanctuary. Like, please leave.
The poor kid.
I was also, like, shocked that he had the balls to kind of be screaming at her and try and tell her to get out, because she is really scary.
I think he finally just reached his limit. Like, now you're in my bedroom? Oh, my God.
Pretty much. But of course, the episode ends, I guess, kind of happily for Kim, despite all that she's gone through. And she goes out to talk it out with Dan. And then when the rest of the characters converge to check up on them, they're getting it on in the kitchen. What did you guys think about this scene? And more importantly, I mean, like, was anybody shocked that the Weirs just didn't tell Lindsay that she needed to stay away from these crazy people that just brought the crazy into their home?
I think that was
the worst.
Yeah, I think that was the biggest surprise for me, was that they didn't just, like, as soon as the kids were out of the house, immediately turn around and go, you're never to see these people again.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, if this had happened in your guys' house, what would your parents have done?
Oh, man. I don't know.
I can't even comprehend.
Yeah.
I feel like my dad would have just gotten the hose. Like, sprayed them down or something.
I would have enjoyed seeing that, because, holy cow, Dan is awful, and Kim needs to smack him around a bit more and then kick him out of her life, because he is awful. He is not good to her. He's not good for her. He's awful. And I hate him and want to punch him every time he's on screen.
Oh, more so than Kim, huh?
Yeah, because Kim, like, at least now we have a sense of why she is how she is. We don't know really anything about Dan, and all we know is that he's just awful to her. And he clearly has some sense of her life. And he's still like that to her. Like, F you, buddy. Like, I cannot stand him. And it probably doesn't help that James Franco is a creeper himself. So
yeah, that's
see,
true.
It's kind of funny because I'm kind of the opposite, where I think Dan has, there's something else going on with Dan. He's not just a jerk. Like, he's been nice to Lindsay in scenes and said some really sweet things with the whole blue ribbon thing. And like, he's not always a total jerk. So I feel like there's something else going on. And yet Kim, despite all of this, doesn't really, I mean, but Lindsay gets an idea of what's going on in Kim's world. And so she is going to see things differently, but it's not like Kim changes much or tries to be better or anything like that. From like what we saw at the very end of this episode, I haven't seen after this clearly, but you know, so I kind of still have some faith that when we get to know Dan better, maybe he's not just a jerk. I don't know. We'll see.
I just can't help feeling like he's making fun of Lindsay half the time when like he includes her and stuff. It just, there's something about like the way his expression, just, it seems like he's making fun of her without her knowing. I can't shake it.
I mean, it could be all the pot.
Also true.
True.
In general, like, go ahead.
I just wanted to say about Dan and Kim's relationship is that it's one of those things where I feel like they really care about each other, but they're so terrible for each other. Like, I feel like there's a lot of genuine feelings there, but at the same time, they're probably better off not being together. And I'm totally going to throw this back to an Eminem line from a song. But that line, In Love the Way You Lie, where he goes, maybe that's what happens when a tornado meets a volcano. I feel like that just describes their relationship.
I like that you just pulled that out. But yeah, okay, well, that brings up an interesting point. Do you think that Kim should have been so quick to forgive and just kind of take him back?
I mean, I had a feeling
Steve on her part, I think.
I had a feeling that's where that was going. Like, when they finally got in the kitchen and started talking and it was clear that it wasn't going to, like, explode right there, I had a feeling they were going to end up getting back together like immediately right away. It seems like that's kind of their MO. So
yeah, and I know plenty of people like that. They break up and get together all the time, and while I think that this was a really quick turnaround and maybe that part wasn't realistic, I think it is realistic that sometimes couples get into a fight and they're like, oh, I'm never talking to you again, I'm never going to see you again, and then the next day they're all over each other just like they were, you know, the day before everything happened. So I definitely saw where it was going.
Yeah, I agree that it seems realistic. I just wish it didn't happen.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to favorite scenes for this episode. Caitlin, let's start with you. What was your favorite scene?
Mine was the van and Kim writes, well, I didn't like what she wrote on the locker, but I do like that she totally was telling Karen off for being awful. So that was pretty enjoyable. It was like, he was hitting on me. He's like, well, after school, I'm going to hit on you. Like, you tell her.
Yeah, that was a pretty good one. Karen, you had some strong thoughts about this episode, so let's talk about your favorite.
I mean, I love the entire episode. I love the trajectory of Kim's relationship with Lindsay, but also just her character overall. But I think the one scene that really stands out to me is when she's in the car and she's just like freaking out and she's screaming and she's like shaking the steering wheel and she's complaining and she has that whiny teenager voice on, and I feel like, God, sometimes you just feel like doing that, and the fact that Kim does it just shows how passionate she is and how like extreme she can be about things. And for her, that's completely realistic, and that's sort of the household that she's grown up in. And so I just feel like that scene in particular shows you exactly the kind of person that Kim is.
I like it. Kristen, what about you?
I mean, I have
My favorite scene is definitely where they're all standing in the kitchen and literally just watching as Kim and Dan are, like, starting, they fight a little, and then they start to make up, and then Lindsay, like, grabs the doors and pulls them closed. Like, I don't know, it's just so absurd and silly that I couldn't help but just love that scene in its entirety.
Yeah, it's kind of like, whoa, okay, that's a thing that's happening in the warehouse right now.
Yeah.
So my favorite was, it kind of goes to Karen's, where she's talking about, like, Kim kind of just going crazy in the car with Lindsay in the front seat. And so my favorite scene, Kim professes that she actually really does like Lindsay. She kind of just goes, "You're like my only friend and you're a loser," which I thought was just great. So was anybody else like, wait, what? What just happened? Did I just hear that right? Because, you know, she'd see a hard time up until this point. You would have no idea she actually likes her.
Well, that was my favorite line, so.
And I didn't see that. Oh, my gosh. Well, let's move on to favorite lines. Caitlin, why don't you talk a little bit more about it?
She's like, listing things off. She's like, my parents hate me, I don't have any friends. You're like my only friend, Lindsay, and you're a total loser. No offense. Like, do you not comprehend how offensive that was? And then it's just like covering with no offense. Like, Jacob, question mark.
She's a little bipolar, isn't she? Karen, what was your favorite line for this episode?
Mine was when Lindsay decided not to sit with them, and Nick goes over and talks to her, and she just says, "I just don't feel like being abused today." And I think, you know, even though it was a little passive, Lindsay's starting to sort of stick up for herself, or realizing that she's, you know, she's not drinking the Kim Kool-Aid, where she's trying to be her best friend, despite the fact that she treats her terribly. She knows exactly what Kim's doing, and she's getting sick of it. And I think that was a good first step for Lindsay to start being her own person.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I do like that they kind of subtly bring that into the plot, because I think, like, we kind of have all had that person that we're like, I guess, like, quote unquote friends with, but then we kind of drop because we realize that it's not really like a healthy relationship, you know? So it's nice to see Lindsay stick up for herself instead of just kind of going with the flow, hoping that she would finally get the acceptance that she's wanted since episode one. Kristen, go ahead.
I was gonna say, I also love that she doesn't like go sit in the corner or like pull a mean girl and go sit in the bathroom. Like, she finds a table with two people and she sits and she tries to engage them. Like, she wasn't just using the table either. Like, she sat down and like started to talk, and I was like, that's really cool of her.
That's like so much more bravery than I ever would have had at that age too.
Oh yeah.
Like, I could do that in like college, like maybe now, but like even not even now, that would be kind of hard. But like for her to do that in high school, it's just like, you go, girl.
Right, exactly. Yeah, no, my favorite line came from Bill, and it's when they're in the bedroom and Sam and Neil have started like fighting and they knock over the chemistry set, and Bill just goes, "Cover your flesh, cover your flesh." And he says it like monotone as the acid is like burning through the carpet. And it just cracked me up. I have an appreciation for Bill and his like sense of humor / non-sense of humor, and it makes me really happy.
Yeah, that's really great. This line is also really great out of context, because you don't really know what's happening if you haven't seen the episode.
Right? It's like, wait, what? Especially from him, it's kind of strange.
Yeah, definitely. So my favorite line in this episode was, it was a conversation between Millie and Lindsay. And Millie says, "I heard about what she does in the yearbook darkroom." And then Lindsay goes, "What does she do?" And then Millie says, "She, you know, does it." Lindsay says, "What do you mean?" And then Millie goes, "She fornicates it." I'm just like, oh, Millie, sweet, innocent Millie. Once again, I just say, like, Millie is like the best comic relief in this entire show. I love her. So what did you guys think about this episode as a whole? Like, I think Karen, you really loved it, but what about you other girls? What did you think?
I liked it. I felt bad for Kim and wished she would punch Dan some more, but overall liked it.
It's nice to get to know some more about, like, the freaks, because I feel like we've got a pretty good handle on Neil, Sam, and Bill now. So it's nice to finally get some real meaty backstory for Kim and find out why exactly she is the way she is. And I can't wait to see if we get that for some of the others too. Like, I'd like to know what's going on in Nick's life, and I'd like to know what's going on for Dan and Ken, who we barely know anything about. So I did like the episode a lot because it gets you into their head a little better.
Very good, very good. All right, well, that about does it for the episode discussions. So we're going to move in very quickly to listener comments and feedbacks and all that fun stuff. So before we do that, we are going to remind you one more time about our contact information in case you wish to get a hold of us. For starters, you can always email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. If you're on Twitter, you can tweet us at re_watchable. You can also comment in the show notes on hypeable.com for this episode, which is a great way to leave us more lengthy comments if they don't fit into 140 characters. And of course, if you are on Tumblr, you should also go over and follow us there. We are at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. So the first thing we have this week from you guys is actually an iTunes review. Karen, we're going to put you on the spot here because I think you promised to do a couple things if listeners rated us 5 stars. So right here it says, if you rate us 5 stars, then Karen will do her best impression of Kim Kelly yelling at her parents impression live on next week's show. So do you have to do that now? Is that a thing? Did somebody rate us 5 stars, Karen?
I'm not sure if anybody rated us 5 stars. I know that there are definitely some rewatchable iTunes incentives that I should be fulfilling, and I'm still trying to figure out how to do some very, very strange things. So, yeah, but we do.
I totally threw this one in there, so it's, you know, yes. I just did my best to be Ariana this week.
It's very good. It's a good incentive. I'm sure somebody will leave us a 5-star, but yeah. We'll see what happens.
Definitely.
And let me hear this. Karen B is angry as Karen from the
exactly.
show.
Exactly. Karen's alter ego. Which is so a juxtaposition because Karen is like the nicest person ever. All right. So there you guys have it. If you want to hear Karen do her best impression of Kim Kelly yelling at her parents, go ahead and rate us 5 stars on iTunes. Leave us a nice little review, too, while you're at it, since you're there. And you can tweet us or comment on the show notes and let us know that you've done it, and we'll check it out. And then you'll get this nice little challenge from Karen in an upcoming episode. Of course, we also want to remind you that all of the show's hosts have personal Twitters, too. So you can go ahead and follow us. Some of us even, like, tweet along to the episodes that we're rewatching for the next week's show. My Twitter handle is very long because I'm an idiot and I use my full name. It's at Pamela Gokobachi, so have fun spelling that. But I'm sure if you guys follow any of our other hosts with a lot easier Twitter handles to spell out, you can find me easily on there. So do you guys want to run through your own contact information here? We'll start with Caitlin.
Sure. My Twitter handle is at Purple Haired Wonder. That's Purple HRD Wonder.
All right. Karen?
Mine's Karen_Rott. My last name is Rought.
And Kristen?
Mine is at Kranzie85. Kranz, K-R-A-N-Z-I-E 85.
Cool. And maybe just to make it easier for you guys, once this episode comes out, we'll just tweet out with all of the handles of the co-hosts that were on this episode in case you want to get a hold of us. We're going to move quickly into listener feedback for this episode. On the show notes for this last week's episode, we have a comment from Megan. Can I get Kristen to take that one?
Sure. Megan says, ooh, I would love if you guys did Heroes, especially since the new one is coming out. And I think we've all kind of, I mean, we all have interest in Heroes, I'm sure, because we've talked about it a couple of times. But yeah, I know the new Heroes has a lot of people thinking back to when Heroes was great back in season 1. So we'll definitely keep it under consideration.
Right. And of course, this was in comment to the hosts at the 100th episode party bash thing, asking what shows you'd like us to do in the future. We have one more of those. So, Caitlin, can you take that one from HP Boy 13, please?
Sure. Someone says, I loved Nine Lives of Chloe King. I think that was what Danielle wanted to do. So not over its cancellation. Still totally bitter. You guys should do Will and Grace because I was too young to watch it originally, but I've loved the few episodes I've seen. And I've been meaning to watch Heroes for a while, so yes, that too. Anyway, happy 100, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, I love Will and Grace. That's a great show. I never saw Nine Lives of Chloe King, though, so I would totally listen to you guys do that just so I could get into it. We have one more piece of listener feedback. This one comes from Twitter, and it's not really a comment so much as a little rewatchableception, as it were. So, Karen, do you want to read that? It's from the creator of Veronica Mars.
Rob Thomas, you said, I didn't propose to my wife until she'd watched every Freaks and Geeks with me. I had to know if she was cool. So it's good to know that by the time we're all done with this, we're all going to be cool.
Exactly.
Yes. At least Rob Thomas will think we're cool. That's important.
I mean, that's the most important.
Exactly. All right, guys. Well, that about does it for this week. Once again, we want to remind you that you can contact us via email, Twitter, Tumblr, or this post on Hypeable.com. And of course, if you guys are fans of books and movies or television and film, pretty much any kind of entertainment, and you're not on Hypeable already, what are you doing with your lives? It's like the best place to get your entertainment news. But yeah, we'll see you guys next week. We'll be rehashing episodes 5 and 6, right?
Yes. You'll
probably get a whole new group of panelists to fuel your Freaks and Geeks obsession. So my name is Pamela. Thanks so much for listening.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Kristen.
All right. We'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
I do have to confess I'm a little sick. I just got my voice back, so hopefully nothing. Yeah, that's why I sound a little funny. I kind of sound like a goose or a boy going through puberty. So hopefully my voice doesn't cut out in between, but I have high hopes for myself, so we'll just play it by ear.